Morristown Friends School proudly supports WHYY and is hosting an admissions open house on Saturday, November 7th at 10 a.m. Founded in 1785, Morristown Friends offers rigorous academics coupled with a spiritual and ethical education program for students in preschool through grade 12. More information, videos, and all open house dates can be found online at mfriends.org. That's mfriends.org.
The forecast looks fine for voters going to the polls tomorrow. Good evening. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. For a look at what's taking place on the ballot in Pennsylvania, joining me is WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. Let's start with the statewide races, Dave.
Yeah, the headline race here is for the state Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. Three of the court's seven slots are up for re-election. Two of those vacancies occurred due to scandal. And because the court occasionally deals with matters that have partisan impact, such as legislative redistricting or voter access, the three Republican and three Democratic candidates are being solidly backed by the two parties. What's interesting about this race, Dave, is that more than $10 million has been spent, and about a third of that has come from independent expenditure interest groups. But three-quarters of the spending from both the candidates and the independent expenditure groups are pro-Democratic. What's remarkable is that I think I've heard, talked to a lot of Democratic operatives who said we expected national Republican organizations to come in a big way. They came in, but in a much smaller way. The Democrats seem to have the edge in spending and get-out-the-vote effort. Democratic operatives I speak to are cautiously optimistic that they'll be able to pull this off.
Now take us closer into the Philadelphia region.
Well, let's look at the city of Philadelphia. I think most people expect Democrat Jim Kenney to handily win the mayor's race, a huge Democratic edge in the city. But in the city council at large race, there is some question. The five Democrats are expected to win, but there are two seats reserved for non-majority candidates. It's not clear which of five Republicans might win this. The two incumbent Republicans, Denny O'Brien and David O, both have some problems. And an independent candidate, a former Democrat named Andrew Stober, endorsed by Mayor Nutter and by Ed Rendell, seems to have a shot at actually winning a seat as an independent. That hasn't happened in more than 50 years.
Now take us out to races of interest in the suburbs.
In Montgomery County, we have the commission up for re-election, and the incumbent Democrats, Josh Shapiro and Val Arkush, seem poised to win re-election handily. And that's interesting because historically the county has been run by Republicans. The Democrats won 4 years ago, appear in a position to hang on to it. The marquee race really is for district attorney, where you have Bruce Castor, the former Republican district attorney, now once again heading the GOP ticket. In that race, he's challenged by Kevin Steele, a prosecutor within the office, and Steele has made Bill Cosby an issue. He accuses Bruce Castor of failing to prosecute a case of sexual assault when he had the chance years ago, ran an ad to that effect. Castor has hit back saying, well, Kevin Steele, you were a prosecutor in the office. You haven't done anything. Not sure how it'll play with voters, but this race has gotten national interest. It will be interesting to see how it goes.
And when the polls close at 8 tomorrow evening, stay with WHYY throughout the night for complete election results and analysis. Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. Turnout in recent elections has been a bit lackluster, and without a national contest on the ballot, tomorrow's race does not look promising. But local artists are working to change that. Tomorrow, artists will install original artwork outside 20 Philadelphia polling sites. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports on Next Stop Democracy.
60 artists, including the street artist Nosego, prankster Kid Hazo, yarn bomber Ishnitz, and legendary mosaic maker Isaiah Zagar, produced original work on sandwich boards for 20 polling places. So that means three boards per location. Conrad Brenner, the founder of the Philadelphia street art blog, Streets Department, sees Next Stop Democracy as a kind of citywide pop-up art gallery, inspired by Philly's extremely popular pop-up parks and summer beer gardens.
We wanted to take that framework and apply it to Election Day, have that same excitement. All of this art, 60 original pieces of art, many of which from some of Philadelphia's most acclaimed, celebrated street artists, are only going to be on the streets for one day.
Next Stop Democracy was funded by a $166,000 grant from the Knight Foundation to target young people. It's the brainchild of Lanzi Sylvia, who says Philadelphia has grown in the past decade, but voting turnout has shrunk.
We see a lot of energy, especially from young people. We see a lot of positive indicators that the city is just on the up and up. And yet this very crucial part of citizenry, like, you know, being a citizen in Philadelphia, continues to stagnate, if not decline.
Once voting begins, the artists are required to post photos of their work to Instagram to create a sense of community participation on the sidewalk and on social media. The pieces are not supposed to endorse candidates. One of the artists, Joe Burichow, has made political work around Election Day in the past, and he says it's hard to keep it neutral.
I mean, I've tried to obviously keep it nonpartisan, but I think it's kind of hard not to be political when you're doing a piece of art about voting. It's kind of impossible to decouple the two.
The project will also survey people at the 20 polling places and at another 20 control sites that are not getting the artistic treatment to see if these signs made any difference. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Veterans Day honors those who've served in the U.S. Armed Forces. In advance of that federal holiday, November 11th, WHYY is screening a preview of the forthcoming documentary Debt of Honor at our Civic Space this evening. Joining me in conversation is Emmy Award film director and writer Rick Burns, and Beth Linker, film contributor, associate history and sociology of science professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and author of War's Waste, Rehabilitation in World War I America. Rick, Beth, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Rick, you and your brother's work, certainly no stranger to our PBS and WHYY listening and viewing audience. Did this specific project come either out of your collaboration with Ken on the Civil War or more recently the Death in the Civil War piece?
You know, I think that the work that I did with Ken on the Civil War and then more recently with Drew Faust on the Death in the Civil War film kind of laid the groundwork for it, but it really came out of the blue with a remarkable philanthropist from South Florida, Lois Pope, who came to us, my colleagues and me, with the idea 3 years ago. The cause of disabled veterans has been very dear to her heart for a long time. She said, "How about a film about disabled veterans?" And you know, I'm an ex-hippie from Ann Arbor, grew up in the 60s and of a generation where we managed to blame the military for policy differences we might have and came to understand, you know, as we got older, that that was an aberration. That kind of separation from the military, blaming the military, was really a unique moment in American history. Not before, not since have Americans done that. It really kind of resonated deeply with me as something where, you know, I'm part of that now famous 99% of American civilians who have nothing to do with the military. 1% in our all-voluntary army are bearing the burden, and that means it's from that 1% that the disabled veterans in increasing numbers are coming.
Though it would be a disservice to merely describe the work as a chronology, it is Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History.
Right.
And the big picture is that with each successive war, there are more and more soldiers who do come back disabled.
That's right.
Beth, that World War I era you describe as a well-intentioned effort by progressives, but what came out of it were ugly laws and eugenics and such.
Yes. World War I, that's when, you know, the disabled veteran kind of disrupted society, U.S. society, in a major way. It then became, at that time, became expected that disabled veterans become fully rehabilitated and that their disabilities would be cured and that we wouldn't have really a welfare state for them, that we wouldn't have to keep paying out money to disabled veterans.
Rick, in this project, what really is most striking is, although a chronology, it starts right from the onset with a more modern disabled veteran, Tammy Duckworth, and then subsequently J.R. Martinez, Gregory Gatson, and Max Cleland describing the rigors of war and trying to come back whole from it.
You know, these people, being introduced to these people and listening to their stories is really transformative, I think, for all my colleagues and me. And we very much, though, we wanted to create a history. We also wanted to plunge people into the kind of experience which, frankly, we had never had. And therefore, our film starts with this extraordinary story by Tammy Duckworth, you know, which begins with the chilling phrase, "I was having a fantastic day in Iraq." Like any great novelist, Tammy tells you right there that things are not going to go her way that day, and indeed they don't. She ends up with, you know, virtually a triple amputee bleeding out on the floor of a medevac helicopter on her way back, and that she survived is a testimony to the durability of the human carcass and to the heroism of her crew members who came back for her and weren't going to leave what they assumed was a dead body on the battlefield. There's been real progress over time, clearly medical progress. The Tammy Duckworths of the world were not going to make it 50 years ago. So there's been tremendous medical strides forward virtually war by war, generation by generation. But as Beth has pointed out, you know, our attitude towards war, societal attitudes, governmental attitudes, the way we think about disability and warfare shifts and evolves and mutates over time in its own way. You know, the biggest takeaway for someone like me from the 99% is that these people, disabled in so many obvious ways, are so abled in ways that many of us will never be. They have faced challenge. They understand what it means to take responsibility for choices they've made in life. They have risen to the enormous adversity of their physical and often psychiatric circumstance, and more often than not, prevailed. So you want to get to know these people because they're inspiring examples of what human beings do in extreme situations and how they can way more than muddle through. Look at Tammy Duckworth, Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth.
Rick, Beth, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks, David.
Thank you, David.
Rick Burns is director of the forthcoming documentary, Debt of Honor, Disabled Veterans in American History. Dr. Beth Linker, film contributor, is associate history and sociology of science professor at Penn and author of the book entitled War's Waste, Rehabilitation in World War I America. You can hear much more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Turning to this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania's Attorney General says she's pleased with conclusions in a review of a state Supreme Court justice's emails and says she's waiting to see what a judicial ethics body will do with the investigation. Attorney General Kathleen Kane issued a statement a few hours after a law firm hired by the High Court recommended the matter be pursued by the Judicial Conduct Board. State Representative Dwight Evans announces he will run against Philadelphia Congressman Shaka Fatah next April in the Democratic primary. Fatah is currently battling federal corruption charges and says he's innocent and will seek re-election next year. Evans has represented his West Oak Lane legislative district for more than 30 years. Three other Democrats have said they plan to challenge Fatah. 55 degrees. Partly cloudy at 6:18. You're listening to NewsWorks tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast, clearing skies, low overnight, 48 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, Tuesday's high in the low 70s, up to 76 degrees Wednesday under sunny skies. Then clouding up Thursday with a 30% chance of showers in the morning. Thursday's high around 70. Still ahead, Pennsylvania lawmakers have adjourned for a two-week vacation, even as the state's budget remains in limbo. Solomon Jones says that's forced nonprofits into a bind.
At Center in the Park, a Germantown-based nonprofit that serves the needs of Philadelphia seniors, 7 of 29 staffers were laid off on Friday.
NewsWorks tonight continues on WHYY.
Cabrini College is proud to support WHYY, now offering part-time doctoral degrees in organizational development and educational leadership. Cabrini can help you earn a PhD or EdD in 3 years without giving up your life. Their faculty and small classes help to expand your knowledge and professional network while giving you the tools to advance your career. More information on Cabrini's professional doctoral programs is available at cabrini.edu/doc.
I'm going to say something and see what you think. Here goes. There is too much TV out there.
What I'm saying is that mediocre and good gets in the way of great when we don't have a good system for identifying and promoting great.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. One man's theory about the television content bubble, next time on Marketplace from APM.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Astronomers are getting an up-close-and-personal look at an intriguing member of our solar system. Let's prepare to get wet with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, we're climbing aboard the Cassini-Saturn orbiter. It's been in business for quite a while. What's new this time around?
Well, it's a really interesting ride on board the spacecraft last week because the spacecraft made its 21st close approach to the moon Enceladus. Now, Enceladus, the moon of Saturn, it's not the smallest one. It's the next to the smallest one of the main group of moons that are closest to the planet. But the really interesting thing about Enceladus is that It has jets of water vapor that are providing material to the outer ring of Saturn. And that's amazing right there. But in addition to this, scientists have also learned that Enceladus is one of those moons that has a 20-mile thick layer of ice that overlays or encases, encapsulates an ocean of liquid water.
A 20-mile layer of ice encapsulating a liquid ocean? That's a lot of water.
It is a lot of water. It's an incredible amount of water. I think it's more water than is on the planet Earth altogether, everywhere, if you put it all together. So that's a lot of water. So now we have all these interesting things. So the ice, of course, creates a barrier to protect it from the cold of space, all right? And the surface temperature of that ice in some places is 330 degrees below zero Fahrenheit. That's pretty cold.
No global warming there.
Well, there is regional warming, though, because if you look at the southern hemisphere of the planet from which these jets of water vapor seem to be escaping, there are ridges there where the temperature is a full 200 degrees warmer than the rest of the landscape is.
How about a refresher? We're talking about a moon of Saturn, and we're talking about liquid water. How and why?
Yeah, right, exactly. How and why? And we don't know how and why. This is what we have to figure out. So, part of the work that's going to be done by the Cassini spacecraft as it makes this close approach, having made this close approach last week, is that it's going to start to look at the chemistry of the water to get some kind of idea if there are any organics in the water. It wants to look for molecular hydrogen to determine whether or not some of the heating may be connected to some sort of hydrothermal activity at the floor of this ocean, if you will. And the other thing they'd like to do is they'd like to be able to understand what the vent structure is like. Are these holes from which we have jets of water emanating from the moon, or is it a long fissure from which maybe there are curtains of material, curtains of water vapor spewing out into space? This is all a big mystery, completely unexpected about any of these kinds of details about the moon at all. And yet it's opened a whole new area of research in understanding how solar systems form and how they're made and all these other sorts of odd things that we never imagined we'd be looking for.
So water from Enceladus is populating a ring of Saturn?
Yes.
Is that a trend that eventually will lead to the depletion of all the water on Enceladus?
Right. We have no idea. We really don't know. All of this is wide open for speculation, and I suspect there's going to be a tremendous amount of work for graduate students going forward into the future for quite some time. Because, again, we have to figure out how much water is being delivered. Where is the water coming from? Will it deplete the supply? What's in the water? Is it a place that life might have a chance to develop? So if, as we look around other solar systems in the rest of the galaxy, is this what we'll find? And if that's the case, well, then there's lots more liquid water out there than we ever suspected. And then, of course, many more possibilities for an environment where life may have developed.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up with Outer Space Ways Incorporated.
Now 4 months in, and the Pennsylvania state legislature has yet to pass a budget. Newsworks blogger Solomon Jones comments on the ways in which nonprofit organizations have to adjust to the lack of government funding.
As the state budget crisis stretches into its fourth month, state-funded entities across the Commonwealth are feeling the effects of the political stalemate. School districts across Pennsylvania have borrowed $431 million to keep the doors open, and the total could exceed $1 billion by December, according to the state auditor general. Meanwhile, members of the Republican-controlled state legislature voted to adjourn for 2 weeks with pay, even as school districts and state-funded nonprofits teeter on the brink of fiscal ruin. The irony of state legislators being paid to vacation is bitter for many, but especially for those who will lose their jobs because the legislators and the governor failed to pass a budget. At Center in the Park, a Germantown-based nonprofit that serves the needs of Philadelphia seniors largely with state funding, 7 of 29 staffers were laid off on Friday. 6 more will be laid off in 2 weeks if no budget is in place. We are making every effort to continue lunch and volunteer-led programs, activities, and classes, Center in the Park Executive Director Lynn Fields Harris told me, but there's no guarantee that Center in the Park will be able to do so. And that's a shame, because Center in the Park does much more than serve 200 hot meals to seniors every day. The center helps seniors navigate the maze of Medicare coverage choices during open enrollment, provides assistance with low-income home energy assistance program applications, runs chronic disease management and fitness programs, but more than that, they provide individualized assistance to seniors who need it. People like the 83-year-old woman living alone who needs help to replace her refrigerator so she doesn't have to choose between eating or buying her medication. Or the 73-year-old Germantown resident who was hospitalized for 180 days and found when he returned home that his $88 in SNAP benefits had been reduced to zero for lack of use while he was hospitalized. Without state funding, Center in the Park can't assist those people, and given the unique nature of what they do, those services can't readily be replaced. Reverend Joseph Williams Jr., a longtime volunteer, puts it best. People work a long time and their benefits run out and they don't have family, he said. There are a lot of problems facing seniors because people are living longer. For now, Center in the Park will have to help seniors handle those problems with a skeleton staff and a bevy of volunteers. Until the state budget impasse is over, they really have no choice. But state legislators currently enjoying a paid vacation do have a choice. They can resolve to adopt a budget and move Pennsylvania forward, or they can remain in their partisan corners and watch the vulnerable citizens sink. I'm Solomon Jones.
Solomon Jones writes the Philadelphia Experiment blog at newsworks.org and hosts mornings on 900 AM WURD. Finally this evening, on Friday, an organization meeting in South America will determine whether Philadelphia deserves their unique honor. No, it's not the 2024 Olympics. The Organization of World Heritage Cities will meet in Arequipa, Peru, on Philadelphia's potential inclusion as a World Heritage City. If picked, it would be the only U.S. city with this historical designation. The OWHC will need to determine whether Philadelphia holds enough cultural and historical significance to merit inclusion. It's a group that includes Aleppo, Cairo, Jerusalem, Vienna, and Rome. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Tomorrow evening, we'll have reports from the street on Election Day, and then stay with WHYY throughout the evening as the results come in. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Foundation helps make nonprofits stronger, offering workshops and services designed to increase effectiveness and build the capacity of organizations throughout southeastern Pennsylvania. The Philadelphia Foundation can help you support the organizations you care about today and forever while you receive tax deductions. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or online at philafound.org.
On the next Fresh Air, actress Ileana Douglas describes how her life was forever changed when her dad started a commune in the backyard after seeing the film Easy Rider, starring Dennis Hopper.
He started to grow his hair longer. He started to grow a mustache. I mean, he started to resemble Dennis Hopper.
Douglas has a new memoir called I Blame Dennis Hopper. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM. New Jersey's Clean Energy Program proudly supports WHYY. New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, incentivizing businesses, local governments, schools, and residents to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing in your home and business with support from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.